Welcome back to The Drop. This is Michael Saramella here to talk about everything that happened this week in surfing. And apologies, the hiatus went a little bit longer than expected, but I did enjoy my time off, so thank you for allowing me that. And apologies that I know the podcast cadence has not exactly been great, and I know we've been having some audio issues as well, so we are working to resolve these things. Hopefully this episode drops on time and comes through with clear and high enough volume. But anyway, we have an exciting week ahead. Buck is about to join me, and we are going to talk about a new film that we just made and released with Chippa Wilson and a bunch of your other favorite surfers. We also have an industry murmurs piece where we talk about sponsorships that have happened, some that you know about and others that are definitely going to be news to you. We also have an interview with Ethan Ewing, world number two, which honestly just like never happens. So the fact that we actually got to speak to Ethan at length and get some really good stuff out of him, stuff that we've never heard before, we're really excited about that. We're also going to talk about a new Stab Edit of the Year entry and something from our friends at Surfline and O'Neill. Let's drop in.
Michael, you have returned. You've returned a very bearded man.
Yeah.
Perhaps wiser.
I'd like to think so. Probably not. But it was nice to have a little break. The podcast is great, but it's nice to go do other things every once in a while too.
I understand you drove around New Zealand in a van. I think I said that you were at the Jax Pro, and I hope somebody bit like last time.
Yeah, I didn't get any comments this time, so I can't confirm, but I'm sure somebody did somewhere.
The cool thing about the new QS is that there will, oh, no matter when you take time off, I'll always be able to find one somewhere.
That's true. That's true. I'm just down in Mauritania, just competing against those folks. Only place I can get a freaking heat win.
Yeah, hey, you do what you gotta do, brother. Choose your region. How is the New Zealand? Did you see any sheep?
I saw so many sheep. Sheep, by the way, like, I don't think they know how round they are, because they climb up these giant, super steep mountains. And I swear, if they fell down, they would literally just tumble for like hundreds and hundreds of meters.
Wow. I mean, you don't want to see an animal suffer, but...
No, you kind of want to see that happen.
Just like, when you put it that way.
I don't think it would hurt, so long as they hadn't been sheared recently.
Yeah, they're fluffy. Cushioned, right?
Yeah. So, New Zealand, absolutely unbelievable. If you haven't been, you have to go. Totally exceeded my expectations. Like, I wasn't even really thinking about surfing either, and we also just scored really good waves one day, or a couple days actually, but even beyond that, I could have not even gone to the coast, and it was still one of the best trips of my life.
Whoa, that's a big claim. When it's just not even just waves? Whoa. Bit Euro.
I picked some things up in Euro. I started drinking coffee in Euro, and I started to appreciate things other than surfing. So I think I'm becoming an adult.
Holy shit, man. Congratulations.
Thanks. All right, now let's get into the surf news. Very adult stuff to talk about.
Let's. Chippa Wilson stars in Zipper, a surf film by Stab and Monster, directed and edited by Stab's Blake Michelle. Produced by Stabs Garrett James and watched by fucking all of us. It's good.
I would think you would like this. Chippa Wilson surfing a variety of waves, some small and playful, others large and not very playful. It seems like it's up your alley.
Yeah, the last wave, I'm not sure if I would describe as playful. That didn't look like my definition of playful. Speaking of the end of the film, Harry Bryant, who obviously features in this thing, poses a question. I think it's like the last thing you see in the film. It's like after the credits, you gotta stick around, be one of the real ones to find it. But he pretty much says, like, you see Chippa and he's just doesn't even have any empty skin. He's just so tatted up. Deanna just mentioned that he's always surfing to like this heavy metal music, and you could kind of be like, is this guy a fucking psychopath? And I'd say that question gets answered in this film through the little interstitials there, if you will.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, ending your film on a closeout or a wipeout is pretty fucking epic. Like, I don't even know if I've ever seen someone do that before. I think that might be, like, a first in, like, a major surf film. So it's definitely worthwhile. It's still one of the best waves in the entire film, despite him not making it. So that's one thing. But then on the other hand with Chippa, like, yes, you see this guy who's, like, super tatted. You see the way he surfs, like, pretty reckless and crazy and airs and everything. And you would sort of expect him to be kind of like a lunatic on land, like kind of like a Chris Davidson type, RIP. But he is genuinely like the nicest person you will ever meet. Like anybody who ever's met Chip, I'm sure, is nodding their head right now. Like he is just the sweetest human being on planet Earth. And it's this funny, I guess, little dichotomy in his surfing and appearance and then just who he actually is as a person.
Yeah, I think Dion compares him to the Buddha. And if we're doing RIPs, RIP to OJ too. Got to sneak that in this up.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway, I mentioned Harry and Dion, which those are people you're used to seeing Chippa travel with, make movies with. You know, that's a typical pairing. There are some pairings I would say are atypical in here. The most prominent of which is with our reigning world champion, who will not be defending his title this year, Philippe Toledo. Holy shit, Chip and Pip. How about that? I pulled that from a commenter. Thanks to whoever said that. A little rhyme.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before on the pod. I was just happened to be on that trip with them. I played very little, if any, role in this actual film, but I happened to be there helping produce that one. So that was pretty eye-opening for me, getting to watch those guys surf together in super fun, playful surf. And what blew me away most is that you had Felipe Toledo, who had, at the time, he was on his way to winning his second world title in a row. This was in, like, May 2023 or whatever, so he hadn't won the second title yet. And he's obviously like in peak form. And then you have Chippa, who's a free surf guy. And I think the common rhetoric, even in like surf media or whatever, is like the guys in the CT are there for a reason. And it's because they're generally just way more consistent than the free surf guys. Like most free surf guys grew up competing and just for one reason or another couldn't hack it. And so they took this alternative route. But what I found in Nicaragua was crazy is that Chippa was winning like not just like one session or two sessions. Like he was winning. It was maybe like 50-50. Like it was crazy. He was surfing so well relative to the person who was literally deemed the best surfer in the world.
Yeah, but Chippa's unique, isn't he? Like I'd say most other free surfers, Felipe's going to smoke them. But I think you see it like even in the stuff we've done, at least we featured on Stab before, of Chip riding like a soft top. And it's like you could tell it's one session and he's doing just a million things. I think that guy is more consistent than most other free surfers. But looked like you guys got some really fun waves in that trip. You were in the center of America, from what I understand, the land bridge between the two.
That's correct. Yes, that was Central America. They also went in this film. Well, you talked about Felipe. A few of the other names that pop up in here are Bobby Martinez.
Yes.
Just an absolute cult favorite. You can't not watch Bobby surf. They surf the worst waves that you could ever imagine. Well, they're not that bad, they're just really small. And Bobby's level of surfing and the way that he just like maintains speed through a wave and still just like absolutely punches through the lip, it's so fun to watch, even in little 1 foot lefts. They also go with Eitan Osborne and Tara Watanabe to somewhere else in the world. Yeah, there's a lot of places that we're probably just not going to name. I'm sure a lot of people would know who they are by watching it, but there's just no point. And then, yeah, you mentioned rounding it out with Harry and Dion. So they went all over. He surfed with everyone from the Monster team. And they, yeah, get waves from 1 foot to, what would you call the last place? 10 foot? 12 foot?
I don't know. That clip you just see, especially that last clip, you know what's going to happen because it's in the film and you get a sense for being towards the end of the film. So you know, like, you just watch it unfolding. You're like, what the fuck? I don't know. I'm bad at naming wave size. But, yeah, 10 I'd feel comfortable with.
Yeah, it was huge. Like, we got a frame grab, or not even a frame grab. We got a photo from John Respondek of it. And it got sent through the Slack channel kind of while they were on that trip. And Sam McIntosh was like, Jesus, is that Waimea? And it's just Chip knifing like so far behind this giant teepee. He's just at the top of the wave and he looks like a little ant. We actually did a full frame on that image about a week ago on the site, so you probably saw it. But it's just like ridiculously big.
Such a wild decision.
So yeah, Blake and Garrett and Shin and Hayden and Will and everybody else involved with this film, they did a really, really good job. I know Chippa loved the film as well. They just finished up touring the film across Australia and the US. And we have two little pieces of news right now. First is that we're going to have an interview with Chip. I think it'll be on the podcast next week, potentially, but it'll definitely be on the site. And on top of that, after wrapping up the U.S. premieres, Chippa just flew over to Japan with our friend Ian Crane and a small stab team with the purpose of getting prepared for Stab High 2024 in that Japan pool that you saw Evan Geiselman hitting the shit out of, what, 2 years ago now? And from all reports, the air section is about as good as it gets. I don't want to give away too many details yet. We're still ironing out the fine details, but this is happening in 2024. We're going back to the pool, and we're going to have the biggest, best field that we've ever had in Stab High.
Oh, my God. Chicken skin. I mean, I know it, but still. But still. The Eddie gets a new headline sponsor. Coca-Cola Group stickers up a 2-time world champ, and the Tractor scoops up 2X Stab Surf of the Year winner. Bonus one more. Stab in the Dark Star parts ways with O'Neill. So if you're hearing this, if you haven't read this story yet, let's play a little guessing game. I had to do this. I knew this thing was coming, and I knew I was across some of it. Basically, I wasn't across the Eddie. I wasn't across the Coca-Cola, and I wasn't across the JS one. The Stab in the Dark Star one, I knew it was coming, and I think the audience will probably be able to deduce that one pretty quickly, unless we are referencing... Yeah, I guess there's two people that could come to mind, but if you're thinking...
Oh, that's true.
I think recency bias would let you know that that's Kaloha Andino. Eddie headline sponsor. Did this one surprise you, Mikey?
Well, I mean, it's not like I knew it was happening, but when you put all the pieces together, I think it makes sense, because we've been talking for a while now about a particular surf brand who had a little bit of a media slip up in the past year, and they are trying to sort of like recoup their brand, I think, a little bit. And they made some pretty strong headway with that recently by picking up a certain 8-time world champion. And now they're going, I mean, if you talk about getting the female goat on your team, if that's a big coup, then what about getting literally the most prestigious surf event in the history of the world? That's pretty good as well.
How fun would it be to be working at Rip Curl right now?
Yes.
Fuck me. You just have carte blanche
to just like do the chorus to the core shit.
Oh my God. You just signed Steph and then you're like, what's next? We're not done. We're getting the Eddie? Like... That's fucking awesome. It's so cool. It's so cool to see them just flexing. I think it's good for everybody. Obviously, it's great for that brand. It's great for the iCal family. It's great for surfing in general. And I think it's great for the industry. I think seeing, you know, there's no chance that any of the other big brands aren't not taking note of this, right? Like, they're seeing Rip Curl set this bar so high. And I think it's awesome. That one I didn't see coming.
And I don't think it ends here either. Like, from what I've heard, there are conversations going around. Like, they got Steph, who is at, yes, she's the GOAT, but she's at a certain point in her career where world titles don't seem as likely, if even possible, anymore. Who knows if she's even going to come back, especially with some of the news that we have coming in the next few weeks, I would say. But there are a few other people out there who are definitely going to be winning world titles in the next few years, and we heard that they're looking at one of the men who has a very, very, very good shot at that. So nothing can happen yet because there are still deals in place, and, you know, obviously all these things need to be brokered and negotiated, but there's a decent chance that they will be signing one of the most prominent male surfers in the world in this year as well.
Wow. Wow. Good for them. Great for the industry. Awesome news. Coca-Cola, not too many 2-time world champs out there. This one I had to think about a little bit. I gotta be honest. I didn't think too hard. I just kind of clicked in at this point.
Did you go John Florence?
No, I didn't really think it was John. I didn't. I
mean, why not?
I mean, probably for the...
Just going to start his own drink company?
Yeah, he might as well at this point. Hey, you go on a sailboat, you get thirsty. You need it. It's purpose-driven product, brother.
It's Tyler Wright.
It's Tyler Wright. Coca-Cola Group, although she posed on Instagram with a Coca-Cola jacket, I think this one, she's going to be more aligned with Powerade. Iconic beverage there from anybody from teenage athletes to severely hungover adults. Interesting move. I think always it's... I think anybody that can make money off of being good at riding a surfboard, I back. And so I hope she enjoys the cold, refreshing taste of Coca-Cola.
Wait, is she still on Monster?
So it looks like she is reducing the caffeine intake a little bit there. Looks like she's off Monster onto the Coca-Cola. You like a good Coca-Cola, Mikey? Sometimes there in Costa Rica in the heat?
I could never just drink a soda. That's the most insane thing I've ever heard of. An adult person just drinking a soda is insane. I'll occasionally have it with like a little bit of rum or whiskey, but even then I would rather have it with something a little bit less sweet. So yeah, not a big soda guy myself. You?
Indonesia, you've been eating food that is irritating your entire digestive system, and you say, surely this will help. And
no, you go Pekari. Always go Pekari or Bintang.
Yeah, well, those are...
Bubbles, Bintang.
Those are obvious ones, but sometimes when you're having that, it's like day... The first few days you're excited to eat the food, and then by day, let's say six, you've had nasi goreng twice a day, so that's 12. Your stomach's just over it. That's when I get a Coke in. I'll hit it then. But in my normal day-to-day life, no, I got to say I'm not a soda man myself.
Anyway, we're getting off topic. Tyler Wright signed with two, I guess you could call them both drink companies. And combined, it's worth over $300,000. They're both multi-year deals, so it's not just a one-off for the Olympics. And yeah, pretty good come up, especially for another surfer who, at least by appearance in the first half of this year, seems to be on a bit of a decline. So obviously, things can change. She could win Margs, she could win the Olympics, and we will be having a very different conversation in August. But for now, Tyler Wright is actually struggling to just stay inside the cut line, so she's got to do that first. But either way, she's going to Tahiti. She's got some money in the bank now, thanks to AG1 and to Coca-Cola. And that's another one of our little updates, Buck.
Yeah, well, a few more hits of that AG1, she'll be back above the cut line, buddy. Stab in the Dark Star. No, it's not Jordy. It's Kolohe. He is off O'Neill, and he is on to other pastures. So
we're going to have an interview with him, I think, next week where we get into this, because this was a very concerted decision by Kolohe. If you've seen him on Instagram, you can tell that he's really not happy with the state of the surf industry. And
I have noticed that.
Well, not that he's never been one to complain. He's definitely been one to complain, but he's also one to back up those complaints with action and like actually driving to create what he sees as a better future. So Sam McIntosh and Kolohe are going to get on the phone. They're going to talk about what his plans are with 2%, which is, yeah, he doesn't want it to just be like a, you know, an Instagram, YouTube sort of thing. Like, he wants it to be something bigger. So I'm not going to give away too much there, but he's going to explain sort of why he left O'Neill and what his plans are for the future. And yeah, speaking of the future, we have Jai Glindemann. He was, of course, on our Stab Innocence trip back in like 2018, and now he is a full-grown man. He got a crazy wave in Fiji during that really big swell that they had at Cloudbreak, and now he is going to be riding JS surfboards. So he's the two-time Stab Surfer of the Year winner, of course, in the junior category. But yeah, I saw him surfing when I was over in Australia, and I can say that the boards appear to be working.
Good. I mean, come on. We know that JS works, don't we? But that's cool. That's cool. He did the microdose. I'm happy to see him on those JSs. You can confirm they work though. The tractors,
yes,
are mowing.
I can confirm.
All right.
And the other two that we have are Jack Freestone signing for a year with Rhythm, and Maud Lacar from Stab Highway Europe fame also signed with Oxbow. So that's a bit of an industry update. But the real takeaway here is that we're starting to see positive signs. We saw what happened with Nate and Florence, with Nate Florence and Florence. We saw what happened with Steph and Rip Curl. Now Rip Curl is sponsoring the Eddie. Basically, the idea is that we have been in this mindset of like, tomorrow is going to be worse, is one of the things that Sam has always been saying about the industry. And it seems like we've hit rock bottom. And the great thing about hitting rock bottom is that you're going to bounce. And it seems like we're in that bounce right now. So yeah, we could be going back up. We could be seeing more sponsorship deals. They're going to be, I think, different deals than they were in the past. They're going to be like smarter deals for both parties, and it may not be spread as broadly as it was before. But I think that the top surfers are really recognizing their worth and how to display that to brands. And I think we're going to see a little bit of a renaissance.
Wow. Winter is coming to an end. Some songbirds out there, flowers sprouting. Let's do it. Stab interview, a rare glimpse into the mind of world number two, Ethan Ewing. I don't think I appreciated how rare the glimpses into the mind of Ethan Ewing truly are until I read this. I mean, he's not the most chatty fella. He doesn't give away too much in his post-seed interviews. He's not somebody who shares a ton on social media. Actually, when the CT was in town here, Snake was coaching him. And at one point I was on the beach just with Snake and Scotty Hammonds having a look at the waves. I think Ethan maybe even showed up without texting Snake. So he's a quiet man. He's a quiet man. But Crispin sat down with him and really got a lot of awesome answers out of him. I feel like I learned more about Ethan Ewing in this read than I have in my life by 5x. He's never seen snow.
It's true. He's never seen snow. And to your point, one of my favorite comments was from the owner of Crispy Grinds, which if you've ever been to Hawaii, you know is an incredible, I think, Brazilian acai truck. So they have this like really, really, you can tell it's just like fresh organic acai. They also make other delicious things like, oh, this thing called a coxinha. It's like a little fried dough ball of cheese and chicken. It's just unbelievable. But anyway, he commented and said, I never comment in here, but I had to when I saw that it was an Ethan interview. So much respect and admiration for him. We run a food truck in Haleiwa during the winter, and he would come by consistently. He was always so nice and kind to everyone working there and the fans around the truck as well. By the time the season was done and everyone left the island, the whole staff had a favorite surfer, and that was Ethan. And I think that says a lot, because the content of one's character, not to steal a Martin Luther King quote, but it's more relevant sort of how you are to people that can't do anything for you than people who can help you. Like, say, Surf Media, in theory, could help build Ethan's profile, but he doesn't typically give us the light of day because he just doesn't care about that. Like, he just cares about doing his thing and I'm sure being a good person. And that came across to this person who runs an acai truck, which I think is really cool.
It is great when life kind of takes a turn that could be perceived as a negative thing and somebody just spins it into a positive thing. Like, after that incident with Tanner Hendrickson, it's cool to see Emrod open up an acai stand there in Hawaii. So shout to him. Shout out to Ethan. Never seen snow. Maybe this is more common information amongst people in Australia and especially around the Gold Coast. But, I mean, I knew he grew up in Strati, an island just north of the Gold Coast. And I knew that Strati was isolated. I did not know that it was so isolated that he had to take a boat, a ferry, and a bus to get to school every single day, which could take an hour and a half each way, sometimes longer if the weather is shit. Can you imagine? And that was for 5 years. 3 hours of commuting every day to go to school? That's insane.
Yeah, that sucks. That means you're not surfing in the morning, probably. And depending on the time of year, you're not surfing in the afternoon either. I don't know how he got so good.
Yeah, it's that was a fascinating tidbit to me. Another fascinating one I learned, I'm just picking up on the kind of oddities right now. We'll get into some of the more meaty stuff, like his favorite surfers, but it seemed like this was something other people knew as well, but I didn't know that he grew up with a bell on his bedside table, one of the two bells his mom won. So that's really cool. Now his is next to it. That's just such an awesome detail about life, I feel like. That's, how can you not love that? How does that not make you feel warm? What else did you learn, Mikey? I'm getting low on my oddities.
You brought it up already. You brought it up already. His favorite surfer. I mean, I think most people's assumption would be pretty obvious. He gets compared to this person and has since he qualified for the tour when he was just 18 years old. Remember, he got a 9 on his first wave at Snapper and proceeded to lose that heat and every heat in the next 5 events that he surfed. He didn't do better than a 13th in his first year, which is also very much like Andy Irons, who did not re-qualify his first year on tour. So yeah, Andy is the person that people compare Ethan to all the time, but he says his favorite surfer is Taj Burrow, which is fascinating to me because Taj grew up, was like a tail whippy air guy, like just kind of polar opposite to the way Ethan surfs, I would say.
Yeah, that one really caught me off guard too. Really cool. He also talks about his self-belief, which, I mean, it's one thing to talk about these random little things like not seeing snow, but that's way more personal, right? And his fellow Trilogy New Wave star, Griffin Cole Pinto, is quite active with sharing like that type of stuff on social media. He'll just kind of read his journal entries, and he's very, very open about that. And I think that's really cool to see. Ethan's kind of the opposite. He's not really showing you much, but Binzi was able to get some out of him there, which I thought was cool. He just talks about, you know, he pretty much thinks some people try to like overdo it and just put on this display, and he just kind of handles his shit internally and believes that he is where he belongs and believes that he can do more. So I'm not betting against a man like that, Mikey.
No, me neither. That is why I've put in a significant amount of money on him to win the world title now that Felipe Toledo is not competing. So up the ETH. And yeah, I don't know when we'll hear from him next, so we're just going to have to savor this one.
It was great. Thanks, Binzi. We love you. Watch a cylindrical and cinematic approach to Stab Edit of the Year. Hounds of the Storm, this one's called. The surfer is Connor McGuire. The filmer and editor is Clem McInerney. So this thing is 100% Irish. Connor is an Irish surfer. Clem is an Irish filmmaker. There is kind of that stuff we're somewhat used to seeing, like the beautiful Irish landscapes and coastline. And then there's some underwater stuff, which is new, that I don't think anybody's seen out of Ireland before. No surprise that there's abundant sea life up there hidden beneath that dark water. But what is surprising to me is that the filmer they worked with to grab this footage is friends with the dolphin. He has a sort of, I think many people have seen the movie My Octopus Teacher, where basically a guy knows where this octopus lives and they go and hang out all the time. And he films it through this octopus's life. It's very touching. Makes you never want to eat octopus again.
Weirdly, a little sexual.
Very. The tension is high, right? this guy has a similar arrangement with a dolphin. So don't check out his page if you like eating dolphin. You won't feel the same way about it ever again. Anyway, Mikey, I talked to Connor for this one. I wrote the little intro, and I started that intro by saying Ireland was the most fruitful surf destination in the world last winter. Last winter being the 2022-2023 winter. Do you agree?
I didn't know they could grow fruits on Ireland. I thought it was a little cold for that. I would have assumed it was like Hawaii or something.
It's mostly potatoes, I believe.
Yeah, that's an Irish fruit. Yeah.
Yeah, you need an exit plan when that shit goes wrong, man.
to your point, yes. I would say, because, like, of course there is a place like Hawaii, you know what I mean? But those clips seem so, it almost doesn't even count Hawaii, because it's so everywhere. But for, like, a place that you can go for a film and make a section that stands out, yeah, I'd say Ireland's a pretty, pretty strong place, if not the strongest last year.
Well, put it this way. It gave us Nate Florence's ride of the year / potentially greatest wave of all time ever surfed in the history of humanity. Nobody really awards that title officially, but it is officially been decided as ride of the year. And then it also had a section in Quicksilver's Repeater, which won best film of the year and contributed to what I think was the best section in Russell Bjork's Stab Edit of the Year, winning Outer Edge of Leisure. So that was all one season that it did that. Like every free surfer, it's on their radar now, right? And it is really just this sleepy place. In terms of latitude, where he grew up, if you put that degree of latitude in the southern hemisphere, that would take you to the very tip of South America, almost to the Drake Passage, which separates it from Antarctica. So it's...
That's crazy. Have you read The Wager?
I'm not.
Okay. I don't read books often, but when I do, I bring them up on podcasts.
Yes.
But this is a book about a journey that some people from England made back in the, I believe it was the 1600s, Yeah, that sounds... No, 1700s, I think. 1700s, they're going around around the tip of South America to get to, like, Chile and Peru for some, you know, some of those conquests they like to do over there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were fighting the Spanish. It was this whole thing. But basically, they brought this whole troop of, like, warships, and they just got absolutely demolished by these storms that go through the Roaring Forties and the... whatever the 50s are called, the 50-degree latitudes. So they got absolutely smoked, and they ended up getting shipwrecked and stuck on this island. And it just made me think, like, yeah, the fact that that is where Ireland is on the opposite side of the globe, like, it is truly in the most treacherous part of the earth and the ocean. So it makes sense that they're able to produce waves like that. But yeah, the amount of people who are willing to go out there and surf them in the cold and the wind and the rocks and everything, like, it just, it adds a lot of weight to it. And every time I go back to New Jersey, where we're from, to surf a winter storm, I'm reminded of just how much of a fucking kook you are when you wear a 5'4". Like, you have to lose 40% of your surfing ability when you put on that stuff. And these guys are just suiting up every single day and doing it and surfing some of the heaviest waves in the world. So, yeah, kudos to them.
Kudos to them. Our, you know... condolences to the English. They clearly lost that fight against the Spanish if they're trying to get around that coast to do that. You know, L there. But let's hear from Connor. Let's have him tell us a bit about where he grew up.
One more thing. Hold on before we listen to Connor. If you need any more validation of this clip, and especially I think this comes down to how just like cinematic and well produced it is, Albie Lair said this was the best edit he's seen in years. So yeah, with that, let's hear from Connor.
That's awesome. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I grew up in a little sleepy town called Bundoran that kind of comes to life in summertime, but is generally quite dreary in winter. And I started surfing here like 20 years ago at a local surf shop that had just opened their doors. We were pretty much their first customers. It's called Bundoran Surf Co. And they were just like real good role models growing up, and they all traveled around the world to like Indo and Hawaii and stuff like that, like chasing waves, and painted like a really beautiful picture of surfing for us. So we were kind of frothing on that. And of course they had all the classic Grom abuse days where they'd tie us to poles outside the shop and stuff like that. But it was all character building stuff, you know. And yeah, Bundoran's like a little mecca. They call it Bundonesia. it's pretty cool because I grew up on a little beach on the north side of town, and it's called Holland Strand. And between there and the farthest headland, which is like a protruding peninsula into the bay, that's like where you can see Mullaghmore. So within that little horseshoe, it's like 14 kilometers, and there's just like, it's kind of peppered with a whole host of waves, and you can kind of, it's like stepping stones onto the next heavy slab, so you can kind of like push your limits and get a little bit more comfortable. And yeah, a couple of years ago there wasn't loads of people surfing here, like, or surfing those heavy waves, so you kind of had a bit more room to get comfortable. And yeah, we had like a couple of traveling surfers come through, sort of like show us how it's done, as well as like a couple of amazingly talented locals like Fergal Smith and King Kilcullen and Hugo Galloway, and then all the bodyboarders too here were like really inspiring growing up. So just kind of watched all those guys and what they were doing in our waves and how much fun they were having, and wanted to like recreate that myself. So yeah, I kind of just took it step by step and surfed as much as I could around home, and then yeah, down south too, and sort of just built it up from there, really.
This would be the best surf trip of 99.9% of surfers' lives. Shout out to the elites who can say otherwise. We are here today to discuss Maps to Nowhere. I believe this is an O'Neill project, and the whole vision is to find empty, very good waves that people have seen very little of. And they did that well here, didn't they, Mikey?
Yeah, well, it's O'Neill, and they have, I'm sure, a ton of help from people who are very good at finding and forecasting waves in Surfline. And this is one of those ones where, like, Surfline, in a way, they're competitors with Stab, you know what I mean? Like, we both produce surf content. This is one of their series, which, in theory is going to be battling for eyeballs of people who may watch our series or blah blah blah. So there is like a competitive nature there, I suppose, but we just kind of have to like give credit where credit's due. And this is one of my favorite series in surfing right now because they really are going out and finding waves, and if not finding waves and surfing them for the first time, they're still going places where no one else is. So they're really putting in the work, and this comes, at least the way that it's framed in the series, I don't know if it's exactly correct, but it seems like that's the way that they're pointing it, is that it's basically this guy, Matt Rode, who has gone out and just discovered all these different waves in the world and just, you know, looking at maps and charts and everything, and has pinpointed all these different locations. And then he is the guide for the O'Neill team, who in this case is Soli Bailey, Lucas Alston, Ando Santos, and Winter Vincent. And they go somewhere, I honestly have no idea where it is. It looks like it's probably somewhere in Southeastern Asia, but I truly couldn't tell you where. And it was a place that Matt had never been before, and he was fairly certain that no surfer had ever been before. He just saw it on the map. He waited for the swell. He pulled the trigger and just basically had a bunch of points on a map that he wanted to check out that looked like potential setups. And they get there, and they surf and score four waves that potentially no surfer has ever been to before. And I'm talking about like getting properly tubed, but also at a size where it's pretty everyman approachable. And that's where this title comes into play. Like every surf trip, you feel like you want to have at least that one session that makes all the time and the money and the travel worthwhile. And that usually comes down to just like, you know, right time, right place, wind changes, people don't know about it, etc. And you just have this little magic moment. And they had four distinct moments like this at different waves that they'd certainly never surfed and potentially nobody else ever had. So I don't think you could really do better than that for a surf trip unless you are in that elite 0.01% that they want to just find the biggest, gnarliest wave in the world. But I don't think that's most of us.
No, it is not, Mikey. How good are fun waves? How good are fun waves? Nice job finding that thing. There's a guy, John Seton Callahan, old school surf photographer. He has a site now called Surf Travel Explorer. He's pretty good. He's hit me up on the, because this has been an ongoing series, he's hit me up when some of the other ones went live, and within like 24 hours, I have an email from him being like, this is where it is. We have some clips of it. We're using some photos. So I'm going to see how he plays this one, given the narrative that's in place here.
What's this guy's name?
John Seton Callahan. All right. Surf Travel Explorer is his thing. I think he does no E on the Explorer because he's old school, and that's fucking badass. Fuck your vowels.
All right, we're going to make a series called Maps to Somewhere with Jean-Claude Van Damme coming sometime in 2025.
Sounds good. Let's make it happen. All right, what else we got, Mikey? What's coming? What's news? What's shaking?
Well, like I said, we have an interview with Colohan Dino. Oh, you know what I just realized? Ooh. We didn't even touch on it because I suppose you guys did a whole segment on it last week or whenever it was. But the WSL officially hired Ryan Crosby.
Oh, yeah. So that's official.
That's another win for the...
They used the same
photos as us, too. They did, those bastards. No, but yeah, it's official. He's going to start in May. We are in talks with the WSL to get an interview with this guy, which... those things are always really tricky because you have this new person coming in and they obviously, you know, they don't want to ruffle any feathers. They don't want to break any eggshells just while they're coming. So the odds of him coming in and saying anything like super impactful are pretty low, but I'd still love to talk to the guy and just get a sense of like sort of what he stands for, what his vision of professional surfing is, and how he plans to achieve that. So we're going to be working on that. So if it doesn't happen, you can blame the WSL because I'm putting it out into the universe. This is something we are actively seeking.
And give me a call if they need some, you know, they do like how to talk to media courses. Many pro surfers have taken them. Crosby, hit me up, buddy. I got you for this one. If you want to get surf fans behind you, I got you, buddy. Let me be your speechwriter.
Big dick power surfer. So you got to throw the jersey on, Buck.
You don't even have to like do anything you say. Just get people all revved up, and I'm sure we'll love them. I think all you'd have to do is just say, we're going to take it back to the core without making any reference as to what that means or how a just free to watch broadcast of professional surf contests is not core to begin with. Just say, we're going back to the core. Don't change the schedule. Just say that. You fucking win. Clean it up.
And then on the film side, we have some Ferrari Boys. Ferrari Boys is coming back.
Vroom, vroom.
This is something we're super excited about. We've already filmed some with Harry Bryant, Holly Wan, Creed McTaggart. And these are being done by Toby Cregan, the OG of Ferrari Boys, and someone near and dear to our heart. So that's coming back.
Insanely talented, man.
Yeah, insanely talented. That's true. Yeah, he quit like a super successful rock band career.
People were like crying because of that. Have you seen the footage of their last performance? He's got people crying. He's that talented.
We also have another episode of How Surfers Get Paid, another one specific to women. So if you enjoy the last one on the sexualization of women in surfing, this one will be more on the commercial side and the rise of women. So I don't have a firm release date on that, but that is coming soon. And yeah, obviously Margs is going to finish up. We have the mid-year cut, so a lot to look forward to or dread, depending on your personal predilections.
Oh, Jason Andre's ready, baby. He's not on tour this year, is he?
No, he's not.
God damn it. We gotta get him back.
Thank you, as always, for listening to The Drop. Like I said before, I know that the podcast has been a little all over the place lately, and we've also been slacking. We haven't been doing our world quiz series. The WQS has been also on hiatus, so we're going to try to bring that back, but we're going to try to have some more interviews on here for you, some more games, and of course, all this week's surf news. So until next time, over and out.